Today's daf in Masechet Ketuvot, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, is daf Yud, and we had actually gotten ahead a little bit on daf Yud, and we spoke about the fact, as a matter of fact, what the heck, let's start from the beginning just to review it so that we can get into the sugya from the beginning. This is really the beginning of our questioning exactly when we will believe the Tainas of Betulim, what exactly Tainat Betulim means, what the difference is between the Taina of Petach Patuach and the Taina of Damim, and why it is that the Chachamim, at least according to Shmuel, would paskin that we can actually deprive a woman of a ketubah just because the man says so. Why should we do that? Idmar Rav Nachman Rav Shmuel, Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, the Chachamim were the ones who metaken lehem levnot Israel. The Chachamim made this entire takana of a ketuvah, that one should give a betulah matayim and one should give an amana amana. Now that takana leaves it up to them to define how much of a taina would be necessary to prevent her from collecting the ketuvah. So they were the ones who granted the ketuvah, and they were the ones who determined that if somebody comes to Beit Din the next morning and has a tanat betulim, hey me eminuhu, that if he would say that, that he would be believed. So then, I don't get it. So then they didn't achieve anything. If the guy could simply get around from paying a ketubah with the simple expedient of saying that petach patuach matzati, so like they're pretending to be these great advocates for women, but they're not advocating anything. They're just basically allowing a man to do what he wants when he wants, no? So, I mean, obviously, it's only in this particular situation where it's immediately afterwards, the Tanat Betulim. I mean, you can't say it's completely valueless, and that certainly wasn't the question. Because, I mean, look, the ketubah is certainly there in the event that the guy dies, right? She's still going to collect the ketubah. We can't say it's completely valueless. And what about in cases where even with Tanat Betulim, he does not necessarily have to divorce her, like we talked about the cases of the non-Kohen or someone who was married after the age of 3, was not married by her father before, and so on. So the question over here is, but since it's possible for there to be a placement of, at least in this particular case, where we would simply believe whatever the man says. So, I mean, is this considered to be the real meaning of keeping a woman assured and safe, that nobody is going to just take advantage of her? That's the question. Have they really done what they set out to do? Amar Rava, yes, of course, because there is no way that she actually needs a ketuvah for this particular morning, because the bottom line is, it's a chazaka, ein adam torech b'seudah mafsida. The guy, if he really was out to divorce her, why in the world did he make a wedding the night before? So that means it's costing him like all of this money. He's making a wedding. You're telling me that that idea of not showing up the next morning and saying that I'm getting rid of her, that is not as bad as paying a ketuvah? It's a heck of a lot worse than paying a ketuvah. So therefore, in these particular circumstances, judging by the fact that he's willing to do that and that apparently this is what really happened, so then there is no real hefsed in believing him. It's not going to be pogea in the safety of a woman. Anyway, Tana. Now, the Braita puts it like this. Ho'il v'knas chachamimu. That's a very strange language. That since the ketuvah is only a knas, like in what sense is it a knas? We're going to ask that. But in any event, it's a knas chachamim. So lo tigbe ela min haziburit. So here the question is a different issue. She's collecting a ketuvah. Now, normally, when we have a collection of a debt that the Torah says you have to pay, let's take, for instance, any of the cases where you have caused damage, right? All of those cases, all of the Avot Nezikin and all of their variations. What's the din over there? You have to pay from the Edit, correct? So then if over here this was a Deoraisa, and as we're going to see, the basis of considering the possibility of its being a deoraita is the fact that it's included in the Torah under ones umefater. We're over there is where we get the idea that there is such a thing as a mara betulot. And that is really a function of nezikin. Somebody who rapes is also going to be chayev in terms of damages and so on. It's included in that general idea. If the Torah had told us that you're mechuyev to pay this, then it would have been from the idit. Remember that the difference between paying from idit or benonit or ziburit is not a question of how much you pay, but it's a question of what type of property can she collect with the lien on his property against her damages. So does she have to go to the whatever it is that he gives her, or can she take the very best and easily sellable? That's the only question. Obviously, the amount that she collects is going to be the same. It's not going to be affected. But the ease with which she can collect is affected. And yet, by the ketubah, the halacha is that she collects only ziburit. So over here, it's explaining, why is this, that she collects only from ziburit? Because the whole idea of the ketubah is essentially a derabonan, and it's only a knas. Now, I don't understand your language. Excuse me for a minute over here. Knasa, I understand. Knasa is where somebody did something wrong. I mean, this guy hasn't done anything wrong. So why are we saying there is a knas? No, what we mean is that hove takanat chachamimu, the idea of a ksuva is a takana. The truth is that ultimately there is the sense that it shouldn't be easy to get rid of her. On that level, it's a type of knas. In other words, if you're going to be attracted to another woman, and because of that, you're just going to throw out this woman who just gave 5 years of her life to you because you find someone you like better. So it is appropriate to say a knas in an overall sense. The idea over here is, of course, that this particular individual didn't do anything. He's just coming in now and he has to pay his ketuvah. So what we're saying is the entire idea of a ketuvah is a drabonon concept. And therefore, since it doesn't have the normal halacha of idit, therefore, lo tigbe ela min aziburit, she can only collect it from the lowest quality, most difficult to sell land. Or, of course, if he gives her anything else. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel lomer. Here, apparently, Reb Shimon ben Gamliel is fundamentally disagreeing, and he says this is entirely wrong. Because ketuvat isha is actually a deraisa, and admits min ha-Torah. And we're going to see that this is a derivation of the din of Ones and Mefata, where the Torah refers to a chamishim shekel that is called the mohar betulot. And chamishim shekel, of course, in our contemporary Gemara language, is 200 zuz, each shekel being 4 zuz. Now, the question is, what does that mean when he says that it's Ketuvah Se'isha Min HaTorah? Is he arguing, and is he saying that actually it has to be paid min ha'idit? Or is he being meida that, yes, it's paid from a ziburit, as it turns out that even though he's arguing, he may certainly agree that it is either paid for benonit or from ziburit. Why would that be? Because as I mentioned to you earlier, the entire concept of a ketuvah is a very profound social and psychological experiment. And it was constantly modified in terms of the data that were coming in about the results. And as we're going to see throughout the Masechet, there were ups and downs in the way in which the ketuvah was seeking a balance between a woman feeling secure and men feeling that it's just too much to be committed to make it worthwhile. So when it gets to a point, and I think very much contemporary marriages are like this, where it's just not worth getting married. People would much rather just be together without marriage because it's just ridiculous to be caught in a situation where you're going to end up in court for 5 years and maybe a woman making off with everything and all your salary and whatever. Who wants to get married under those circumstances? So that's exactly what they discovered when the tnaim of the ketuvah were too difficult. That men were just saying, forget about it. I prefer not to be married. And because of that, there were many times that things were changed in order to make marriage more palatable. And then it went to the other extreme also, in which women no longer felt secure. So the ketuvah that we have today is actually the result of a lot of finding a balance between the concept of chen, which we're going to be seeing, to make marriage palatable, to make it attractive for people, and between it's being too expensive to make it worthwhile for people. Okay, but anyway, getting back to Reb Shimon Gamliel. Did Reb Shimon Gamliel actually say that the ketuvah is a dioraita, ketuvat isha min haTorah? I know of another braita in which he says exactly the opposite. This braita says like this, the Rabbonan say, kesev yishkol kimohar habetulot. Now, this is a fascinating concept. Here we're talking about a mifate. Mifate is somebody who seduces a woman, and the idea over here is that since she's a nara, so the father still has shevach ne'urim in her, and if she was a betulah, so then he has to pay according to the amount of a dower that is normally made to betulot. Now, what is that referring to, right? So that's basically telling us that there is a concept of a dower, and what's more, that when we talk about the other pasuk, which we have in Dvarim, we're over there, it doesn't say, it just says money. It doesn't say how much that money is, right? But in the case of an ones, it says beferish chamishim kesef. But it doesn't say what kind of kesef. But over here it says kesef yishkol, which means it's shkalim. So if you put the two psukim together, what you derive is that you use shkalim in determining the amount. But what amount of shkalim, that you learn from the case of a ma'anes, where over there it's chamishim. Put the two together, ones u'mefata, and you get chamishim shekel. And they're referred to as the mohar habetulot, which means that the mohar habetulot, which we're calling the dower, which is essentially the settlement of the ketuvah, this is what you get from me in the event of divorce or my death, is 50 shekel. 50 shekel is 200 zuz. So this is what it teaches us, that the halacha of the ones u'mefata is essentially a ketuvah. Mikan samchu chachamim l'ktuvat isha min haTorah. And from here, we actually were soymech. Now, soymech, it's true, usually means that it's not a diaraisa. Samchu chachomi means that they were soymech on it. So, I mean, how exactly is this assuming that it's a diaraisa? So, l'maisa, the Rishonim explained that the concept of the samchu over here is because the amount and so on, because remember, there are all these various dinim of the Tnaei Ketuvah in terms of Yerusha and in terms of insurance and so on and so forth. So the Samchu Ketuvat Isha on a basic idea of Mar Bitulot, but the actual idea of the paying, the Chamishim, that is really Minatera. Everything else, that is something that they were soymech on. That would be what the Gemara is assuming. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel says, no. The whole idea of the ketuvah has no basis in the Torah. It's entirely midivrei sofrim. And therefore, this is the exact opposite of what we just said a minute ago. A minute ago, we said that Reb Shimon ben Gamliel is dafke, the one who says that the ketuvah is the oraita. And therefore, maybe it is mina'idit, or maybe it needs the idea of hefker bez and hefker in order to make it payable from beinanis, according to some shitas, or from ziburis, even according to him, according to some shitas, which we'll discuss. But in any event, it's certainly a stira to saying that here he's the one who says it's not midivrei Torah, and there he says it is midivrei Torah. Oy vavoy, says the Gemara. So obviously, we've messed up the girsa. We have it backwards. So this braisa that we just quoted, it must be backwards. It's Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. He's the one who holds that it's a dioraita. And the quote from, ostensibly from a Tanna Kamma, was a mistake. It was really Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. And then it should say, v'chachomim omrim ktuvat ishayin midivrei Torah midivrei Sofrim. And that way everything works out fine. So then it would be what he said before. But I understand, why did you just arbitrarily decide that it's this last quoted braisa that's the one that we should flip? Now, what makes you think that this is the less reliable Braita? And what we said before is the more reliable Braita. Maybe we should have said the other way. Maybe we should have said that we made a mistake in the first Braita. And actually, Reb Shimon ben Gamliel is the one who holds that it's the Rabbanan. It was the Chachamim who held that it's the Oraita. Now, I'll tell you, because we have confirmation from elsewhere that it's Reb Shimon ben Gamliel who says that it's a Deoraita. And that is a real confirmation because it's in a Mishnah that we have later on in our Masechet. Over there, we have a question as this. Hashamina leilu Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, the Omar Ketuvah Tisha is actually Deoraita. Where exactly do we see this? Much later in the Mishnah. Mishnah says, another 100 da from here, Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, Omer, that if someone, over there we're talking about a man who gets married in Bar Neva's neighborhood in Kapotkia, and then he divorces his wife after they make Aliyah, and the question is now, does he pay in Kapotkia coins, or does he pay in Eretz Yisrael coins? Now, Kapotkia coins were extremely heavy-duty shkalim. They were more valuable than the standard shekel. And normally, when you're talking about a debt that is collectible midioraita, then it goes according to where the contract was written. But over here, it says that if you married someone in Kapotkia and then you divorce in the Eretz Yisrael, so then, since the ketuvah is a dioraita, noten lamimot Kapotkia, you will have to pay from the more important coins of Kapotkia. But the Tanakhama argues on that and says that no, if you divorce in Eretz Yisrael, so then you can pay with lower value coins, the shkalim of Eretz Yisrael. So then it's Reb Shimon Gamliel who's insisting that we're going to be machmer on this like a chov midioraisa. So you see that he's the one who is Machmir, and because of that, it must be that we had the wrong gear set in the second Braita and not in the first Braita, and that way we end up without a contradiction by reversing the second Braita. Or there's another approach, actually, where we can make things work without saying it was wrong gear set. And we could say that the second Braita was misunderstood. And actually, Kula Rebbe Shimon ben Gamliel, the entire Braisa is perfectly good. According to Reb Shimon Gamliel, it's just that there's some missing words that you have to insert, and then everything fits okay. And here's what it should have said, okay? Let's start from the words. Mikan samchu chachamim l'ktuvat isha min haTorah. So now that is perfectly okay. That's exactly what Reb Shimon Gamliel said. And we're saying this is Reb Shimon Gamliel. Now, how do we continue those words? Because we end up saying that, but you should know, despite the fact that that is true, it's only true of a betula. But the ketuvah of an almana is eina midivrei Torah ela midivrei sofrim. And here is where to switch to Rebbe Gamliel. She, not Rebbe Gamliel Omer, but rather because Rebbe Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, is that a ketuvah of an almana, eina midivrei Torah lemidivrei sofrim. So we were talking about two completely different things. Of course, Reb Shimon Gamliel holds that the ketuvah of a betula, which is based on the pasuk of mohar habetulot, yes, that is true. That is indeed a deraisa. But the case of the mana of the almana is not deraisa, it's only a derabbana. Now, lemaisa, this turns out to be a big machlokas. Most of the poskim come out that the ketuvah is only drabonan, as the Rambam speaks out very clearly, and therefore are left with the question of why in the nusach of the ketuvah of a betula does it say kesev matan dechozer lechimi d'oraita, 200 zuz, which is what you should be getting min haTorah, which is mashma, that it's shaloka halacha, if you're paskening that the ketuvah is only a drabonan. And so some of the Rishonim suggest that it's not, that's including the Rush, that that's not a problem. Because all that that means is that in order to make certain that people do not define the coinage as being the coinage that we have today, and then it would just be 50 shekel. So therefore it wants to speak out the money that is roi to you as defined as money in the Torah, which is the 50 shekel in the Torah. But it doesn't mean the money that is due you in the Torah. It means the money as defined in the Torah in similar cases of Oinos u'Mefate. And the very fact that it would be writing it in this way is there just to increase the sense of responsibility and how seriously we're taking this. But it doesn't mean that we're posturing that the whole thing is the writer. Okay, now anyway, let's get back to the other issue. The other issue was, what precisely is Tanat Betulim? What will happen if somebody has Tanat Betulim? Will he be believed to be Mafsid or the Ksuva? Why would he be Mafsid or the Ksuva? Is he being Mafsid or the Ksuva because he's a Kohen, and therefore it's not a Sveik Sveika, or because he's a Yisroel, but over here she was married before she was 3 years old? Or is there a din that he's Mafsid the Ksuva because he's claiming, look, I never wanted to marry a non-betula. You turned out to be a non-betula, and therefore this whole thing was a mekach ta'ut, and I only wrote the ketuvah thinking that you were a virgin, and you're not. So, I mean, these are all questions we have to decide. Plus, we were mechalek earlier between a taina of petach patuach matzati and a taina of lo matzati damim, right? In which the petach patuach is not actually, we say, 100% knowable, even by the guy himself. Whereas damim is an objective thing. Either we're damim or we're not damim. So there was a case, so this guy comes to Reb Nachman and he says, look, I married a betula, and instead I found a petach patuach. So Reb Nachman said, all right, guys, get out those big, heavy palm branches with the thorns sticking out of them, and let's beat them up. This is a very good way to beat someone up, as anyone who got their hands stuck on one of those sukkah branches. Whew, oh, boy, is that painful. And because, I mean, let me ask you something. This guy is coming in here to this Beis Din, and he's claiming that he has a degree as a sex expert, you understand. He knows whether it's a petach patuach. Now, the only way he could know that is because he's got every whore in town is basically sitting there waiting to provide services. We don't like people like that, so I think we should beat him up. So Azbu Kufri, let's get all of these branches with these thorns on it, because obviously, Mivarachta Chavitale, all the girls in this town of Mivarachta must be sitting there lying down in front of him, and he's going down the line. I mean, how else did he get this amazing expertise that he knows all about Petach Patuach Matzati? And I can tell you that is a very painful kind of way to give punishment, because back in the old days, when they actually beat kids in school, they knew how to beat kids, especially these guys that had just come over from Europe, and they used to be the cheder teachers. So my wonderful teacher would take a tack and put it through a ruler, and then he would hold your palm out like this, the most sensitive place of your palm, and he'd go whack with the tack into your palm. I mean, it's crazy to think of today. I mean, people were thrown into jail, and this was standard, you know. So actually, this is a pretty good way to be very painful. Wait a minute. Reb Nachman was the one who started the daf off by saying that he is believed when he says Petach Patuach. And now you're telling me that Reb Nachman says, this is ridiculous. Yeah, no, wait a minute. I never said he's not believed. He is believed. Just we're going to beat him up. I was like, how is he believed? Well, obviously we're accepting his expertise. But if we're accepting his expertise, we know that the only place that they award these kind of certificates is in the little red whorehouse. And therefore, he deserves a little bit of punishment. This is the way Rashi learns. Tosha suggests that it could be like Chatchila, that the idea was that let's beat him up because he's such a chutzpanyak, and we're saying this sarcastically, what? He's been sleeping with every whore in Mavarta. That I don't believe, right? And then we end up saying, no, actually, we take him seriously. Okay, there's another alternative to understanding it. Rav Achai says that actually, there's no comparison. We said over here that let's beat him up. That's because we were talking about a bachur who supposedly has been this nice Mir Yeshiva Bacher, what would he know about Petach Patuach? And he's coming in here all of a sudden telling us about Petach Patuach. And Khan, where Reb Nachman didn't say anything at all about, and that was the issue in this version. Well, why didn't he say we're going to beat him up? I mean, all of a sudden, he just said he's Neman. That's true. And that means where he was married before. So, of course, he's Neman. Over here, we're not dealing with the Nemanut. We're dealing with how did he get this Nemanut. Another Maisa, which was certainly a lot more tolerant, is this guy comes to Rabbi Gamliel. And he says to Rabbi Gamliel, you know, I thought I was getting myself a betulah, and I found a petach patuach. So Rabbi Gamliel said to him, well, you think you found a petach patuach, my boy, but maybe not. Are you quite certain? Shema hitita, maybe you were coming in at an angle without even realizing it. Listen, I'll explain to you. Shalach HaMashal. Let's imagine you're walking along a dark and completely blackened street, and you want to get into the house. So you're an Adam HaHalak Bishon Laila Vafela, and you get to your house. And you see, what happened was, there was actually something in the way of the door. So your wife had put a table, you know, in case somebody tried to break in, whatever. So now imagine that you want to go in very quietly. So you just open up the door a little bit and you slip in sideways, you know. You don't even know that there's something in the way of the door. You try to open up the door, bang, and you can't get in. So it really depends how it is that you walked in. Hita mitzao patuach. So if you went in at an angle, you found the door completely open. You didn't even realize something's in the way. But lo hita, if you just try to open the door normally, then you find it that it's closed and the door is na'ul. Others say that no, he did not really believe that accidentally someone just had the right angle to avoid the tearing the betulim. But maybe what he said to him was, maybe you were a little bit too rough. Is that possible? Maybe you were so rough. I'll give you amazing hitita. Now over here, as the Mefarshim explained, this is a borrowed term, hitita. We don't mean hitita. We mean you achieve the same thing. In other words, I'll give you a mashal. And this is someone who's walking in the middle of the night. He's coming back home, and his wife had put something in front of the door to make sure, you know, that nobody's going to walk in. He comes to the door, and he goes, and he smashes the door open. He didn't even notice that there's something behind the door, you know. So he says, oh, well, very nice. She left the door open for me. That's wonderful. But if he walked in like a mensch, you know, then he would have noticed that maybe there's something in the way, you know. So hita b'mezid, again, as a borrowed term. So mitzao patuach. Lo hita b'mezid, mitzao na'ul. So you may not have even noticed there was something in the way. What do you know? Okay, so we're talking about over here the petach patuach. Now let's move on to talk about lo matzati dam. So, and this of course is Rabbi Gamliel four generations later, right? So he's a great grandson of that Rabbi Gamliel. Omar lei. So he says, Rabbi ba'alti v'lo matzati dam. So meanwhile, the Kala says, Rabbi, I'm telling you, the fact is I was a betula. I don't know what happened. I have no idea what happened to the dam, but I mean, this is crazy. So he said to them, bring me the sudar, Evilias sudar, bring me the cloth that you used as a bedika after you had slept together. So they bring him this sudar, and he washes it, he soaks it, shura obamayim, v'chipso, and after he cleans it, he finds that there are bloodstains on it, matzalav kamatipe damim, so that originally it hadn't been visible, these bloodstains, because it was a mess. It was full of semen stains. It was impossible to see anything on it. But when he washed it, he saw that the cloth was stained with blood. Omar lo, so he said to the chosen, lech zachei b'mikracha, go, take your purchase and have fun. So asked the Gemara, so can we do that too? Omar lehuna mar bered rova miparzaki l'ravashi. So ananami navirach, I never heard of this. I mean, how come we don't have washing machines in the Bezdin? Omar Lei, we can't use this. Because remember that over here in Bavel, the Giyut Shelanu is Kikibush Shelahem. That first of all, this of course is very Nogia, the Dinim of Tisha B'Av in the 9 days, where we're Mechalik between Kibbutz and Giyutz and the relationship of Kibbutz and Eretz Yisrael. This is Nogia, the Dinim of Avelut. But there's a lot of machlokas in about what precisely, remember, we use the word Giyutz today to mean pressing, whereas the reality is that it might just mean the use of harsh chemicals to clean, or it might mean using a Giyutz board, which, as Rashi talks about, is an even of zichuchit. It's a glass oven which you would rub things on. So he didn't need to do... By the way, it's very weird what an even zechuchit is and why zechuchit would be specifically what you use. But the strange thing is that it's really what was used. I remember when I was a kid, before they had washing machines, there was what was called a scrubbing board. And a scrubbing board had this serrated kind of glass kind of stone in it. And it's really, I had no idea why. I always took for granted, I don't know, that's where you wash clothes. But apparently there is that. Maybe it's just like the, just enough smoothness that you're not going to tear the clothing, but it's like the harshest rubbing that you can get. But anyway, so this is what Rashi brings over here. And so he said, so, okay, so what are you going to say? So go ahead and do that. So, but if you would go ahead and do that, Amrit na'ave giyutz, if you're going to say, okay, so let's do that. But that kind of rubbing will remove the bloodstains also. So you have no way to be sure that you're going to be able to discover whether there was blood or not. You're not going to be able to clean it with the level of water purity. That was the other shot, is that the difference is a difference in water purity in Eretz Yisrael versus the water in Bavel. And therefore you're going to need to use chemicals. You're going to need to use rubbing. Another one who comes to him and said to him, Rebbe, I don't know, something's wrong. So the Kala says to him, Rebbe, he may think Baalti, but I can tell you I'm still a Betula. This guy is not exactly a top performer. Amar Lahem, so he says, all right, listen, we could figure this out. Now, Lamaisa, we know how to figure this out, right? From Pelegesh Begiva. Because remember, when they needed to select the Betulot from Yavesh Gilad, so how did they find which girls were Betulot? What they did was they put the women, having them sit down, without underclothing, obviously, sit down on top of a barrel of wine. So sitting down on top of the barrel of wine allows the chemicals of the wine to penetrate to the womb. And the womb is very richly supplied with blood, which means that in a very short order, that smell of the wine will be coming through their mouth because it gets around their entire body. So if she is a Betula, so then the smell penetrates very rapidly because there's nothing preventing the smell getting through to her womb. But if she is a Betula, then it's not going to get in because there's only a smaller opening. So what he said was, Rabbi Gamliel Bar Rebbe, he said, okay, look, bring me two Shvachot, two Goyesha girls that we own, and one of them is a Betula, and one of them is a Bula, and I want to test something. Okay, so they bring him these two girls, and he puts them down on the barrel of wine, and sure enough, the Bula Recha Nodev, and the Betula Ein Recha Nodev. So they had established before, just by direct gynecological examination, which one is a Betula, which one is a Bula. Now he wants to try out this test. Sure enough, the Bu'ula, they could smell the wine, and the Betula, they couldn't smell the wine. So then he took this Kala, who claimed to still be a Betula, and sure enough, she was a Betula. So he said to the boy, okay, guy, you got to learn to do a better job. Lech seche b'mikracha, go and bizocha in your mekach. Now, I don't understand. I mean, why didn't he just go and test the Kala? Why do you have to go through this whole rigmarole? I mean, he knows the Gemara, doesn't he, about Pelegesh Begiva and all of this stuff. I mean, so, Nivdok Mikora Begava, why didn't he go straight to the Kaaba. Why did he have to take these slave girls and put them through that? No, Rebbe Gamliel Bar Rebbe, of course he knew the Gemara, and he knew that this is the way that they did it. But to know a Gemara and to know that you know how to use the Gemara are two completely different things. So he wanted to test first whether he is bucky enough and in doing this correctly. Is our level of detection of the smell sufficient? And so on and so forth. I mean, you know, there was a tremendous amount of sensitivity at the time of the Gemara, the time of Plagish Begiva. I don't know whether this still is usable. So first he needed to try it out. So he never saw anybody use this. So he said, listen, Dimalok, Kimle Begava de Milta Shaper, maybe I'm not really an expert in how to do this. And I'm certainly not going to test it out on Jewish girls. I mean, that is disgusting. Lav urach aral zalzuli bivnot Yisrael. I'm not going to do something I don't know about it. I can't do that. So because of that, he said, let's bring shvachot, who I own anyway, and there's no problem being mezalzel in them. And because of that, he tried it out first to make sure that he knew how to make it work. Now, it's very interesting that we have a mice like this in Nida, and where they had to utilize slave women and they were paid for their busha. It was just less busha. But it's not you're allowed to be mevayish. Remember, mevayish is one of the nezikim. So in Achinami, the mefarshim ask over here, how is it mutter? I mean, wasn't it being mevayish them? So it could be that they were paid in Achinami. Anyway, there was another Maisa that had come four generations before, and if that's this is the same Gamliel the Zaken that we started with, the guy said to him, Rebbe Ba'alti V'lomatzati Dam. So the Kala said to Rebbe Gamliel HaZaken, it's true, but there's a very good reason why he didn't find Dam. Rebbe, Mimishpacha Durkiti Ani, I come from a Durkati family, which I'm going to explain in a minute. She'ein lehem lo dam nida v'lo dam betulim. And look, it's well known that in that family, we are simply not very well supplied with dam in the womb or dam in the betulim. We have a lesser supply of dam, and we never have these problems. We never have nidais, and we never have dam betulim, and that was the first way we understand dur ketoy, dur that a door that is katua from problems and that it doesn't bleed. It's not like other families. It's cut off from the rest of the world. Anyway, so when we all sent around to check whether this was true, and sure enough, everyone from that family was well known. They never had menstrual blood. They never had betulim blood. So he said to the chassan, Lech zachei b'mikchacha. So go and be zeicher, ashrecha, shezachit al mishpacha durkati. You're very lucky that you ended up with such a special family. So what does durkati mean? So dor katua. Now, we thought that could support the meaning, this is how Rashi understands it, that it's a door that is cut off from problems of nidais. And that's, that there's no dam. So Rabbi Chanina said, you know, it's all very nice that Rabbi Gamliel tried to make this guy feel good about it. You know, and said, go, be zoche, you know. But believe me, there's a bunch of garbage. Tanchumim shal hevel, nichamu Rabbi Gamliel otoa, he got a very bad deal. Because the Tani Rabbi Chia, kishem shasor yofel isa. In the same way, you don't try to make dough without putting in yeast. Well, the same thing is true about blood. Blood is very meaningful for fertility. You need to have blood to support a vlad. V'tana mishum Rabbi Meir, kol isha shedamea merubin, banea merubin. A woman shows greater signs of fertility by having greater proclivity to blood, because this is a sign of a more richly supplied with dam womb. And therefore she can more easily handle a pregnancy. So why did he say that to her? She must have just tried to make the guy feel good. And in fact, Itamar, Rabbi Yirmiyah Bar Abba said that what Rav Gamliel said to him was, Zechei b'mikracha, it's a schus, go and be zeicha in what you bought. And Rabbi Yossi Bar Avi says, no, he said to him, look, you're stuck, buddy. Nitchayev b'mikracha, you're stuck with what you bought, go take it. And the two Lashonas are understandable. At least Nitchayev is understandable because of Rabbi Hanina. Okay, but why was there something good about it? In which, according to this, it wasn't Stam Hevel, and that there was something good. What was good? It was good. Is the Lati today Safik Nida? Isn't that wonderful? Never to have any problems, to go to the Rav? There's never any issue? Is this considered to be Dam Nida? What Dam Nida? Who Dam Nida? Never heard of it. Okay, so great. That is definitely a schus. Okay. Now, there was another Maisa, where someone came to Rebbe. And he said to Rebbe, Rebbe, ba'alti v'lo matzati dam. Couldn't find any dam. And she said to him, Rebbe, I'm still a betula. And the thing was that it was a very difficult time. It was a shnei batzoret. It was like everybody was malnourished. It was a time in which there were no geshamim, and people didn't have what to eat. And Rebbe looked at them, and he saw shepneim shechorim, that they were basically suffering from serious malnutrition. They looked all dark, and they didn't have like a good circulation. So he told Rebbe, of course, had a very very rich table and a very rich home. So he was mitzave his servants to take care of them and get them into good shape. So they went to Yichnisum Lemerchatz, they took him into the bathhouse, and they got them cleaned up and softened their skin, and then they gave them what to eat, they gave them what to drink, and then they gave them a room to stay overnight, you know, stay over, and let's see what you guys could do tonight. Sure enough, Ba'alu Matzadam. So when they were in better physical shape, both him and her were in better physical shape, they had a normal night together and they did feel down. Omar lo, so Rebbe said to them, okay, so now you know, lech zachei b'mikracha, go and be zeicha and don't have anything to worry about. And Rebbe felt that the pasuk in Eicha applied to them. So Kori, Rebbe aleihem tzafad orama latzmam, that their skin was dried all around their bones. Yavesha yaka eitz, that they were like walking around with skin that was as dry as a piece of wood. And that's why, indeed, he couldn't find them. And now it would be time for Sir Richard. But he is actually has the Sagan at this particular moment. And we are ready for Doc to introduce the next Mishnah. Out of practice a bit, but we'll take it. So, it says the Mishnah, Kitu betula, kitu vatamatayim, ve'almana gets 100 zuz. What about if she is a betula who is either an almana or a grusha or a chalutza? How is that? Because it was mina erisin. So she is still a betula, despite the fact that she's almana. You said almana only gets half. But what if she's still a betula? And before they ever went to the chuppah from erisin, her husband died. You know, she's an almana. Or he divorced her. Or maybe she felt a yibum after he died. And she's chalutza. But it was all mina erisin. So then it's still matayim because she is still a betula, even though we call her an almana. And in that kind of case, yeshlam tanat betulim. So if the second husband took her, assuming that she was a betula, because there never was a chuppah at all, so then you can go ahead and you can claim lo matzati la betulim, which is not clear whether that means it's a complete mekach ta'ut and she doesn't get any ketubah, or that she does not get the ketuvah matayim that had been written for her, but she gets a ketuvah mona. Now that we're going to see as we go through the sugya. So where does this word come from? This word almana. So what is the meaning essentially almana? I mean, the truth is that we'll see that the Araita, the word should be more Elaim, because she is an Elamet, meaning Yoshev Badad Yidom. Her husband died. She's in a state of misery. That would be more what to say. But mana, what is a mana? Says Rav Chana bar Gata, yes, the mana is added because she gets a mana. So al-mana would mean to say this is a woman who's been sent to one mana, if she gets married, obviously, again. Well, I understand. That's not true. I mean, you just said that an almana, mina erisin, gets the full amount. So why is she called an almana? According to you, she shouldn't be called an almana at all. So almana, mina erisin. How are you going to explain the language of almana over there? That's not a problem. I mean, we're talking about the normal almana. A normal widow we're referring to is indeed an almana from Nisuin. Once we did that, so, okay, it became a standard way of referring to an almana. That's all. But it's because of that. But I understand. The Torah uses the word almana. And the din of a ketuvah of almana was a takana of the Rabbanan much later than that. So how do you explain the word almana in the Torah? Almana de ketuvah bi'oraita. What are you going to say about that? Says the Gemara, well, it's called an almana because the Rabbanan were going in the future to give her a ketuvah of almana. So the Torah called her an almana. What's the problem? What? The Torah writes psukim based on what is going to be in the future? Mi katav krola atid? Absolutely. Take a look at the story of creation. What does it say? The name of the third river that was from Eden was Chidekel. And then it says, where is Chidekel? Hu ha'oleich kidmat Ashur, which is Barnea's neighborhood. But Barnea hadn't even been born at the time of Maaseh Bereishis, as far as we know. And if in that case, it seems that the Torah was referring to Barnea's neighborhood before it even came into existence as a Barnea. That's a clear raya that the Torah refers to the future. And Tana Rav Yosef, what is Ashur? Ashur is the city of Salika. And therefore, it means that there was a place we can actually, it's not an area of the earth that we call Ashur because that was its name, Milchatchila. It's the town of Seleukia. And there was no such town, Miavoy, Eladatida. So it means there's going to be a town called Seleukia that's built here. Hachanamida Atida. I'm just wondering, was Salika in Barnea's neighborhood recently, Barnea? No? Oh my gosh. So,
the area is called Cilicia or Salikia. So that name appears in the area, but a relationship between this and the town of Ashur, I don't know. I have to look at it.
But I just want to know, was it your neighborhood?
It's in Iraq. So I was higher up on the Chidekel, but I didn't get this low.
I see. So, but I thought that you took family members from Iraq. What happened? Okay. So, Achanami Datida. So we see that the Torah will refer to things in the future. Speaking of Baghdad, is that what you were referring to, Barnea? Okay. So, Amar of Chana Bagadita. So once we're already in Iraq with Barnea, we go straight to Baghdad and bring you this word from Rav Chana of Baghdad. And we're talking about general ideas of the impression that we have of words and implications of certain concepts. And then we'll see, we'll actually switch to the language itself. So matar, the concept of matar, it does all types of different things. It's mashke, it's mirave, it's mizabel, it's me'aden, it's mamshich. So even a simple concept can have many different qualities that are associated with it in an adjectival sense. So it, first of all, obviously it's mashke, it gives water. Not only that, it can be miravek and satisfy with that water by saturating completely. It's mizabel. It also is the equivalent of fertilization. And it's ma'aden. which means that it makes it soft and shiny, and it's mamshich. It actually causes it to grow. Omar Rava bar Rabbi Yishmael, Vitem Rav Yemiya bar Shalmiya. We see this in the way that the pasuk refers to rain, because it says, Tilamea Rave nachet gidudea birevivim timogigena tzimcha tevarech. So here, take a look at all of the different elements, and you'll see that they're all included in what Rav Chana bar Galata say, that it's Rave. So it means that it saturates all of the Tlamim, and it settles into the different plow furrows that you made. And then you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you make it soft and smushy and fertile, Berevivim. And then you bless it. And bless, of course, means that it's going to grow. So that means Rave is exactly what we said, that it gets deep into the ground. Tumogagna means that you actually are the equivalent of fertilizing it. And then tevarech means that you're blessing it to grow shiny and a lot of. So it's all in the pasuk. There was another thing that Rabbi Elazar says, the mizbeach also has various elements of its mem in it. It's meziach, it's mezin, it's mechavev, it's mechaper. All of these things are in that mizbeach. So it's basically got all of those concepts in it. So when it says meziach, it means moves you away, which we assume means moves you away from averes, which means it's mechaper. Ask the Gemara, but that's the same thing. It's mechaper, meziach is the same thing. I mean, the fact that it's mezin, and that when we bring korbanos, we bring a bracha to the earth of that mean, and therefore, it also gives us what to eat. I understand. It's mechavev. It makes HaKadosh Baruch Hu close to us. But what's the difference between meziach and mechaper? I know mechaper. I know meziach. No. Meziach doesn't mean meziach from avonot. Meziach means it can get rid of gezerot ra'ot. And it's mechaper avonot. Another thing, once we're in Baghdad, is Rav Chana bar Galata also said that, you know, dates, first of all, they're meshachanan. They just warm you up. And they're mazba'an. They really satisfy you. And meshalshalan. They also give you loose bowels. And they're mashran. They give you energy. And lo mefaknan. They also don't overdo the sugar in a way that makes you, like, hooked on all kinds of sweet things. Omar Rav, ochal tamarim al yoreh. If you're going to eat dates, then you should not be meira halacha. So apparently it affects your brain. Well, that's not such a good thing, is it? That it makes you high? But the problem is that the Braita says that dates are great. Meitve. Tamarim shacharit varvit yafot. Now, it's great to have dates in the morning and in the evening. So at that time, that's when people eat breakfast. You eat breakfast and you eat a dinner at night. So then you can have a dessert of dates. But if you eat at the mincha, and that's where you no longer have any other nourishment in your blood, then it's not good for you. And it actually will raise your blood sugar. But b'tzoraim, after you eat and you just had a full meal, ein kamotam, nothing better. Best way to end up a meal. And Rashi says it's not the only point, it's the nourishment. It's because if it does give you loose bowels in the daytime, it's not difficult to find a place to move those bowels. But at night, in those days, it was a problem. And mevatlot shlosha dvarim, there's three things that they can help you with. Machshavara'a, worry. They make you happy. What me worry? That's all about dates. And they fix cholimayim. If you got problems with your stomach, they loosen it, your digestive system starts working, and they also prevent hemorrhoids, because you don't have to strain at moving your bowels. So therefore, they save you from tachtoniyot. So I understand, if they're so good, how did Rav say that they affect your brain adversely? Well, wait a minute, says Rav. Since when do we think that affecting your brain adversely means that they're not good? There's lots of very good things that may make you high. So did I ever say they're no good? Mi amrina de lo malo, I didn't say they're no good. They're very good. But they definitely make you high. So you lose my leg. But lefishaita torda, you know, temporarily, you got to be careful, just like drinking wine. I mean, drinking wine is great, right? But you're not allowed to make any kinds of halacha decisions. So it says, hashoter revi'it yayin al yore. So that's one approach. Or actually, it might depend. It might really be true that affecting your brain adversely in this way is not a good idea. But it depends when you're eating these dates. So it could be that, ha-mekami d'nahama, when did Rav say that you're not allowed to make a halacha, a psak, that's davka, where you were eating the dates before you ate the meal. Before you ate the meal, they raise your blood sugar precipitously, and then you're not able to properly think through things. But if you have eaten a full meal, then that prevents the sugar from entering your bloodstream immediately. And because of that, they're very good. And they don't cause you to get high. And therefore, Rav never made that statement if you eat them at the right time. Because remember, Abaya said, my mommy always told me, dates, mikami d'hama, you want to eat dates before you eat your breakfast, little boy? That's like bringing an axe and cutting down the palm that the dates are on. You know, you're going to kill yourself with that. But after you have a good breakfast, did you eat your Wheaties? Okay, then you can have your dates. Then it's like an avra ladasha. That would be like a bolt across it. What do they call those things that they used to use to bar a door completely from one end to the other? What was it called?
A breach.
Breach.
Isn't
it
a bolt?
Yeah, but the original meaning of bolt, well, I also thought so, but I'm thinking, isn't it? So then what we call a bolt today is just an application of that kind of thing? I also thought it was called a bolt, but it struck me that that's weird. Okay, but anyway, so it's like this long stick you put to the back of the door strengthens it tremendously. Come on, Barnea, what do they call what you put on the gates to the city to bar the gates? What's that called? Is it called a bolt?
I see the word crossbar, but let me work on it.
Ah, maybe. Maybe. Well, I thought that was a weapon of some kind, but all right. Anyway, back to discussing etymology. Why do we call, and remember that whenever we take a word from another language into Lashon HaKodesh, there's got to be a good reason for it in Lashon HaKodesh. So how do you explain the fact that we call doors dashas? Omar Rava, because dasha is derech sham. That's the way to go through. So, okay. So it's as if every door comes with the sign, exit or entry. Fine. Darga. So why do we call a ladder a darga? Amar Rava, Derech Gag. That's the way to get up to the roof. Dar Gag, right? Okay, perfect. Why do we call a bed a Puria? Amar Rava, because it's a great place to have kids on. So Purim Varavim Aleil, you can get people pregnant on beds. So what better use for a bed? Call it, therefore, a Puria as Puria Varivia. Amar Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak, hey, I can do that too, you know? Af Anunomar. Once we're talking about these weird etymologies, I can ask you, okay, why do we call an islandit an islandit? Where did that come from? Because she's like an isle, which is a ram. And a ram, of course, is very significantly male, right? When we talk about someone who's very male, he's a ram. So we're calling her Duchranit. She's rammy, meaning she's like a male. Delo Yalda, she's not going to give birth any more than a male would.